and welcome to Worlds Apart. Back in the 1999, when the Asian financial crisis was ravaging the markets, few thought anything constructive could come out of it. Global elites were hurriedly cobbling together groups in order to coordinate future policies and hopefully stem the decline. One such group was the G20, another BRICS, and for a while they seemed to follow similar developmental paths. Have they now come to a fork in the road? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Binod Singh Ajaichhatru, Director of BRICS Institute. It's good to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Oksana. It's a pleasure to see you in person.
Likewise. Now, before we talk about BRICS and its recent expansion, or decision to expand, rather, I'd like to ask you about the G20, which just had its summit in India. And these formats have many parallels. They were propelled to prominence by the same events. And now it seems that they are on somewhat different trajectories, even though some of the main members, Russia, China, India, Brazil, South Africa, are in both formats. What do you think is the difference in what they derive from participating in both of these groups?
I think the world has come together to thank India for hosting a very eventful, very euphoric, very Indian style, you know, Modi style, you can say. Last evening, I just clicked on Google to see something update about G20, and the very first news was Russian president's website. The G20 declaration is there immediately. That means Russia has accepted it. I mean, they're very happy with the G20. Even the Chinese media, they have come out with a statement that it's a positive signal for the world's, you know, government. 86% of world GDP was at one place. I could just feel that maybe, yes, some part might be neglected, but the huge part of the world was in New Delhi, you know, from everywhere. We did miss presidents from two big countries.
Well, that's an interesting...
It's very rare in history of my country in the last 75 years that we see East and West coming together.
I'm actually not disputing that. I think there is a huge respect for India in Russia, and that's one of the reasons, perhaps even a political reason, for posting the G20 communique on the presidential website. But the absence of both President Putin and President Xi was quite notable. And I wonder if you think it sends any signal, not so much to President Modi, because, I mean, President Putin, for one, would want to go a long way to establish
like
and maintain this connection.
Before I comment on institutional background and what is G20 and how it's different from G7 or BRICS, I just would like to share with you that I'm studying in China and Russia for the last 25 years. My observation is that the leaders of China and Russia, they're very much focused on development of their own nation, their own country. You know, it's two huge nations. If China stops growing fast, you know, the world economy gets cold, you know. Everybody is thinking, oh my God, if China slows down, what will happen to G20? So without China, without Russia, I think the G20 becomes an empty tuck. I'm very candid to tell you. So why the two presidents were missing? Mm-hmm. Not because, you know, they were not happy with G20. What I observed, the news reports in media in two countries, they had very important works, assignments in, you know, northeast of China, in Heilongjiang, in Harbin. President Xi has made some very important policy decisions. Same in Russia, President Putin had, you know, revealed new master plan for the whole Far East, and the Far East makes 40% of Russia. So I think these leaders are very smart to focus on their people and their nation instead of just becoming a show like this, you know, talking about the whole world. If your country is not developing very good, you know, talking about G20 and BRICS doesn't matter. Coming back to the issue, since we are in Russia right now, and I could say President Putin spent 3 hours to explain, you know, what's happening in the Far East, the new growth engine of Russia.
But with all due respect, I mean, President Putin is in charge of his own schedule, so he could do both things. But he chose to invest his time elsewhere. And
I don't agree with you, because in India, we criticize Prime Minister Modi that he's more of a foreign minister traveling outside India than Indian Prime Minister.
But let's not talk about that.
He was not missing any of the conferences. So being a democracy, I think we really want you, any of our leaders, to focus on the issue of pollution, issue of national development and economy, employment, inflation. Not exactly in a year, how many conferences you have? You have conference on BRICS, SCO, G20, G7. So you keep flying. I think President Putin was right not to go.
But can I ask you specifically about the difference in these two formats? Because the G20 grouping, unlike BRICS, has a very substantial Western lobby, the United States and many of the Western countries. And naturally, they are more interested in promoting their own agenda, the preserving the current state of world affairs, Western-dominated political and economic system. And the G20 comes under larger influence of the Western lobby. Do you think the absence of both Xi and Putin may have something to do with them investing more energy, not only in their own countries, but in other parts of the world?
Ma'am, for me, it just gives some spices, to the Western media. Look, Xi is not going. Look, they are not supporting India. Actually, the West is always looking, to divide India, China, Russia. And if two big leaders will not attend, it will just give some, kind of talk show or some, BBC interviews that look, the Indian, they're not happy with India. And after the G20 is finished, I don't see those kind of news. So coming back to the point, G20 is very important for Russia, for China, for India. China has sent a statement that the Chinese goal of, MDG, the Millennium Development Goal, is very much matching with G20. Now, it's a question of China is almost achieving all those 30 goals, and India is just achieving half of them. If it's one world, if it's one future, one common future, I think anything we are talking in Russian studio or talking in New Delhi studio or in Beijing studio, we are talking about same common points that we have to make sure that we are growing, our youth have good employment, and our air quality is nice. So that is the main fact. The climate change issue is the common issue. So whether I was in Johannesburg for the BRICS summit or I missed the G20, I think there are a lot of convergence. But G20 is like, I give you one example in Russian language, that G20 is all about Ruslan, I mean the whole Russia. BRICS is about Far East. So BRICS is more focused on South-South, on this part of the world. So there's a very good example that G20 is really the most important today grouping. And I don't expect Oksana to criticize it. I think you should take part in next G20 in Brazil.
Well, I participated in many summits. I'm not criticizing it. I'm just interested in exploring the approaches. And I agree with you that it seems that BRICS discussions, despite being less formal,
there was a time when you used to play by the Western rules, but the way you speak the English, the way our foreign minister, he quotes that European problem is, world problem, but the world problem is not European problem. So, we are in this stage of time where, the diplomatic language or the media is not exactly controlled by the United States or Western. So I think, we must acknowledge today that we said goodbye to Western bias when it comes to academics, when it comes to media, when it comes to even the financial innovation.
And when it comes to the G20, are you saying that G20 is also changing itself within, despite having a very large Western bloc?
Look, in a big group,
is it more diverse now than it was?
It's just like RT. If you have 10 anchors, there are groupings, somebody likes Oksana, somebody don't like Oksana. So in a G20 of 20, now it's 21 after African Union, there were groupings, one group by US, one group by Mr. Macron. He didn't allow the Russian journalists to get in. There was a big issue in Delhi. So, there's always grouping in Europe. They were divided before Russia-Ukraine conflict.
Okay, so there's no longer
it's the Russian-Ukraine conflict that really united the West, Mm-hmm. So in reality, they were fighting with each other. The Germans, the France, the UK came out of the, Brexit, you see. Yeah. So end of the day, it was time for Asia and Africa to make policy. They were not sure we can make, global policies on climate change, on financial regulations, anti-terrorism. But we are doing it. And this time, President Putin and President Xi didn't go there, but they're happy with the way Prime Minister Modi didn't mention the word Russia in the final declaration.
Which is leading me to my next question about India, because India is a very particular case, both with BRICS, within BRICS and within the G20, because more than others, it's against intensifying antagonism. It tries to sort of preach these harmonizing language, and some of it has to do with your spiritual and political tradition, non-violence, non-alignment. But yeah, absolutely. But we also live in times when geopolitics is pretty obnoxious. How long do you think India will be able to sit on these two stools? And don't you think perhaps it's more harmonizing than the times call for? Or perhaps that this is its own strategy, a shrewd strategy?
I think diplomatic language is quite fudgy. I don't get it, what they say, you know. They criticize the war, you know, but they never criticize the country. So for me, one thing is very clear. Even last evening, President of Russia, he mentioned Prime Minister Modi as example 2-3 times when he talked about making India. So there are a lot of things which Mr. Putin is impressed with India. And even in China, they like the Foreign Minister of India who talks very clearly, you know, to the West.
Well, he's a superstar of the diplomatic world.
Exactly. So what I mean to say, Okshana, to your question that, you know, whether we just want to be like in the middle, you know, non-aligned, we have good terms with United States, we have good terms with Russia. But the fact is that, you know, I'm hiding a soul here. So maybe many people in India, they have a soul which says that Russia is right. But, you know, saying this right in front of studio is politically incorrect. For example, in a family, you know, I was a child and I hit someone. My mother was happy that I hit someone because there was some long family issue. But in the public, she said, no, my child is wrong.
She needs to keep
exactly.
Manners.
So she took me inside the room. She took a stick and she was hitting on the bed, not me. Just to tell the people that my child is wrong. But that's why I'm saying many Indians, you know, at the soul, they're okay, what's happening, you know, they're not critical, but they cannot come out and say, you're right. Try to understand that.
As you mentioned, not only President Putin was very complimentary of President Modi, but President Biden was too very happy with the reception he was given in India. And it's pretty clear that India is being courted by the West, particularly by the United States, to become some sort of a counterbalance or even maybe a bulwark against China. For now, it's being balanced. But do you think the Americans can offer India anything to express, to sort of recruit them more expressly into the Western camp?
Not at all. If anybody in Russia is watching India for 75 years, this is not the first time. In fact, Prime Minister Nehru also went to USA. He got very good welcome. They like India because we share the colonial background. They were colonized by the British. We are colonized by the British. So to be honest, I spent some time in USA. You also studied in USA. They don't like India. I'm sorry. And we Indians know, every day one Indian student is killed at the racialism. Yesterday, one Indian girl was killed in USA. So, you know, there are two ways to look at the things. So maybe Americans and Indians, they have some connection, you know, because of Silicon Valley, because they become rich, super rich. So what I'm trying to say is that we divide it, how we look at the problem in India and America. Politically, you know, defense, security is quite different. We used to buy everything from Russia, all the submarines or the aircraft carriers. But now Russia is not able to supply. I say it again. And if Russia is not able to supply, the only option we have is USA or France sometime. No other country can take part of Russia. The two superpowers are fighting. India, one stand is very clear. We don't want Cold War 2.0. We don't want. I also studied. I was a young man, but I was born in 1980s. So I don't realize how serious was Cold War. When I went to the school, high school, the Cold War was over, right? 1991, I went to the high school. Not even high school, I was just 10 years old. So I had no idea how was Cold War what, but when I speak to my teachers, they say it was very scary. The countries will suffer are developing countries because we have to do business with Russia, we have to do business with USA, with China. But everybody's blocking. Sanctions, no trade, no currency. Many Indian businessmen, they are losing money. They're also making money by buying oil and selling oil, but they're losing money. So my only request to Oksana is that, no, not a single Indian out of 1.4 billion Indian wish that the second Cold War. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the Russians share this aspiration for sure, but for the time being, let's take a very short break. We will be back in just a few moments. Stay tuned.
I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Binod Singh Ajatchhatru, director of BRICS Institute. Before the break, we started talking about the feeling of injustice and the desire to live out of your own soul or out of your own collective soul, one may say. And I think Asia, as such, for many decades and centuries, was deliberately westernized. I mean, there was a deliberate effort to change who those people were in India through colonization, in Russia and China through economic incentives and sometimes political pressure. Do you think at this point there is at least realization in the West that all these nations, as well as other nations, deserve the right to be themselves and develop as their history, their own situation required?
I think in Asia, India and Philippines, maybe some one or two more countries are like over-westernized more than what we wanted. Because despite we got independence in long back, 47, 45, but it was not a true independence. They made us part of their commonwealth and they decided most of the time they influenced our foreign policy, when we talk to whom we talk to. So. India is something very different in Asia. It was more, they think that they are the bridge between, they think it's the language of Prime Minister Nehru, that, you know, we speak English. So we could be the bridge between any problem in Asia and Europe. And that's why Prime Minister Nehru came for the Korean conference, peace conference was proposed by Indian delegates in the United Nations, Indochina, this Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Indochina. India was one of the main leader in the Geneva conference. And then in Bandung, we decided to come out for the non-alignment movement. So the headlines after G20 in New Delhi is that maybe India is coming back as the spokesperson for the South, for the developing world. Of course, any country big like India, they do dream to become some ambassadors or some global leaders, so we invited for the big things. But in reality, I am personally very critical because India is over-westernized. Everything is, you know, copied from Canadian, American, and UK constitution, which is not helping the people who live in something like Paris, like Bihar, Bengal. So for me, China, Japan, Korea, and all Asian countries, they try to westernize, but then they're very radical. So they were westernizing very fast, then they just took U-turn. India is like, you know, is going in both directions. It is westernizing, but Prime Minister Modi and his team, you know, they're changing the name of India. They're changing a lot of things just because they think that India looks like a very European, westernized country. So,
and this this move has been already criticized not only by the Westerners, but I think also some in India. This not yet the decision, but sort of overtures to in Bharat, the Indian name in the native language. There have been a number of countries who did that. For example, Turkey changed its name to Turkey. By the way, Turkey also liked this metaphor of being a bridge between East and West. Russia has changed its name, but came back to its old Soviet anthem. What do you make of this trend of sort of not necessarily going back, but bringing some of the previous history, sometimes not very glorious history, because the Soviet history is a very controversial one, but trying to sort of rely not only on the recent past, but also your grassroots?
I'm sorry, I'm not politically correct here, and I may have some problem when I go back, but I'm pretty against this move because I had similar issues in China. If you compare India with Turkey, it's a very different story because Turkey is an Islamic republic. But India has the second largest Muslim population in the world. We have Christians, Buddhists, and different people. So the foundation of India is very different with the foundation of Pakistan. And look what Pakistan is having problem. You know, you cannot have a country just for one people or one religion, one country. So India should be India. And
but what does it mean? I mean, India should be India.
It means that it's a new republic. Where everyone is equal and every religion is equal, we are secular, every language is equal, and that's the India I was born. That's the India I teach to my students at Peking University. And now if India is becoming just one party, one language, one religion, it's very hard for me to speak to anybody from Africa, from Middle East, that India is the example for a plural, diverse and thing. So I'm sorry, I come from a democratic country. I criticize my government that if you're doing it for election, for getting Hindu votes, that's pretty good. But if you change the constitution of India, maybe it's not helpful because India has a very good soft power. India is not a military power. India is not top three economics power. We are at the five. But when we talk about India in Russia, the people like Krishna, the people like a different culture of Taj Mahal, people like India because they also, India have Goa where we have Christians.
Well, we also like Mahatma
exactly.
Gandhi.
So my point is that India is the most diverse country and beautiful country. And if somebody try to, you know, paint it in just one color, it's not a good message.
Well, speaking about diversity, we need to come back to the issue of BRICS expansion. And I know that India had its own position on the expansion criteria. That position, I think, was somewhat at odds with China. But in any case, this list of new members, Argentina, Ethiopia, Egypt, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and United Arab Emirates, it puzzled many observers because somebody expected other countries to make the list.
I expected Nigeria, I expected Indonesia.
Yeah, how do you understand the thoughts or motivations behind this selection?
Look, the Indian side was not ready because there was no framework how to expand the membership. Even now it's not. The Sherpa were running late, five Sherpa, they were running late to come out with the agreement. The leaders asked them, come on, give a document. But in South Africa, again, South Africa is like India. They have a different kind of population and President Ramaphosa is going for election. And due to corruption in South Africa, power cut, there's a lot of power shedding. A lot of buildings coming down, explosion. I just realized that if it goes this way, President Ramaphosa is not getting elected. So he made it a very personal issue. So Ethiopia was his candidate, and like that, President Putin also made calls to Prime Minister Modi. Iran came in like that, and now 2 days back, I opened the news on RT, and I see that the fuel prices, gas prices has been decided together, that it will not come down below 80. So, you know, the price in India is very high. So I believe everything is politics, everything is economics. The good thing about BRICS is that They include everything. So you come out with two countries, Brazil come out with two countries, South Africa gave three countries, India gave UAE and some countries. I'm not in foreign ministry, so don't take me exactly true. But when I speak to the different delegates, they told me that, you know, everyone had a choice. There was, so nobody was rejected, you know, just take it.
Now, all of these founding members of BRICS, they're very different, but they have one thing in common, which is sovereignty, the ability of sovereign independent decision-making on domestic affairs and the degree of influence globally. Regional powers, by their very nature, are more limited in this regard, and they're not always free to do what they want, even at their own home. How do you think the inclusion of six more members that increases, that more than doubles the size of the group, how do you think it will change the internal dynamics?
It's real change because, you know, the idea of BRIC was given by a British economist and long back, and because of the US financial crisis, we also got impacted. So we said, why not it was Prime Minister Primakov who decided, why don't we have better coordination? So yesterday, President Putin said to all the businessmen in the conference, don't fall in their trap second time. What I mean to say is that you don't have to, what he mean to say that, if I get it correctly, that, you know, we have to have our own financial system. Russia will keep growing. China will keep growing. India will keep growing. So don't listen to always Americans' view and dollars. Let's do business in our currency and nobody can impact us. So we will not have any financial crisis if we are dealing with rubles. So now 40% of Chinese business is in rubles and in yuan. India is also doing almost 5 to 10%. So back to your question, I think originally the four countries were the best countries for the BRIC as per the Jim O'Neill, because Indian and Chinese economies and Russian economies, it's all about economy. Grouping is about politics is local, economics is global. And in that sense, the four original countries were Bolshoi. But, you know, China really wanted to bring South Africa. And South Africa is Malinke. I'm sorry. It's a small country, the economy, the GDP, the people.
But, you know, as Mr. Armstrong used to say, it's a small country.
That's why the Western
humanity.
Media, they say, for the last 10 years, you know what they say about BRICS? They say it's a talking shop. But now, they think it's no more talking shop. Now, why? Because we are talking about currency, about trade, and etc. So expansion is good. No doubt, but you know, it doesn't help the way I do research about BRICS, right? So I'm very focused on five countries. But now if you ask me anything about Ethiopia, about Argentina, I'm sorry, it will be just blah, blah, blah.
Well, you will have, I guess, more work to do in the near future. We have to leave it there. It's been great talking to you. Thank you very much for that.
And thank you, Usama.
Thanks.
We covered many topics.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart.